quite a lot of documents. Thank you for submitting the documents to us that you have in advance. I know that you're probably going to supplement it with a new document. I see that we've got new ones in front of us now. That's perfectly in order. Are you going to make use of this presentation thing? Is that being set up? Okay, because I would want us to start as soon as possible. Perhaps you can start with the documents because we do have it in front of us, and then we can catch up with your presentation. Okay, perhaps you want to give us a sense of how it is that you're going to take us through your documentation. Who's going to be presenting what? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to submit that since we have submitted the hard copies of the presentation, that perhaps we can continue as we have just directed. We'll just make reference to the documents before us. Just to explain the, before I really get to the documents, just to introduce my team first. As you know, Court Services is divided into about 5 programs. I'll introduce the chief directorate that are heading those programs. I think the first program, which deals with training and information management, is Peter Durant, sitting on the extreme left side of me. And then the next program, which is headed by the chief director, Memesi Josinger, which is Court Performance. She's the lady with the red shirt, sitting at the second seat behind Mr. Durant. The third program, which deals with the vulnerable groups, we have had a new appointment that I've introduced, I think, when we appeared before the committee sometime last year, mid-year. Advocate Sherin Seth, she is now heading that unit. On facilities management, Sherin, yes. I'm colorblind, I can't see whether it's orange or yellow. And then program 4, which deals with facilities management, we have Chidisi Ramanyine, sitting at the back there. Then program 5, which deals with the family advocate services, advocate Junior Fiyali, sitting next to Ms. Ramayini. If you could just wave, Junior, right? And then we have the budget support service attached to Court Services, as you know, because we carry quite a big chunk of the budget of the department. So we have a chief director that has been seconded to us to help us deal with the financial management, Mr. Yuan Yonson, who yesterday addressed you on the financial management. And
sorry, I forgot to say to you, what we've started doing with the budget hearings is we've given over to the CFO's office just to give us a bit of a summary, so we'll start with that.
We'll do that, Chairperson. And then, Chair, as you know, as part of the restructuring of the department, some of the policy aspects that we're dealing with, we're now centralized under the Office of the Director General. Mr. Skosana previously, who was part of Court Services, has now been seconded to the DG's office to deal with policy issues that arise out of Court Services. So he's sitting right there at the back of me. Lawrence, not part of Court Services, but I know that he's part of the legislative section. It's also one of the issues that we're going to be dealing with as far as the legislation is concerned. Lawrence Bassett from the Legislative and Development Branch, Mr. Dion's unit outfit. Chair, having done that, I think with your permission, then we will firstly start with the financial management aspect of it. But what I would just try also to outline so that we spend less time in terms of my presentation and allow more time for questions. If we could just look at this presentation entitled, Court Services, which is but the 20A. I must indicate this is a new version of the document that we have presented. I think there's been a slight amendment just on only 3 slides. That is slide 17, slide 21, and 22. So the entire document, still the new one that has just been circulated to you, still resembles the old one. It's just those slides, the three slides that we amended, will indicate exactly what was amended. What I would also make in terms of this presentation to Chair, as you know, part of the issues related to financial management, Mr. Johnson will cover most of those issues. So in my presentation, I'm not going to deal with those. And that's why I think we'll give him some time just to deal with those. Chair, with your permission, then can I hand over to the CFO office just to deal with the financial aspect of court services?
Thank you, Chairperson. You would have received a presentation called Court Services Budget and Expenditure Status. We issued a presentation separate copy. This morning, just now, we gave 25 copies. Okay, I think we've got it. Chairperson, as requested by you, the focus of this presentation would be firstly to go back. Maybe firstly to look back at 0506, then have a look at 0607, and then give you a sense of MTF allocations. You've also requested us to maybe spend time on personnel establishments. From the offset, if justice has approximately 15,000 people employed in our department, approximately 12,500 is supported in court services. Court services has the biggest budget, approximately more than 2 billion rand. So, it is complex, and hopefully, if this presentation does not succeed in meet your expectations, we can provide detailed explanations or additional information. But firstly, on the expenditure outcome for 506, the component, we need to make a distinction between the program court services and the component court services. The total program court services includes money in transit, includes minimum security. So our focus will be on the component court services. Now for 506, the component court services had a budget of 1.8 billion rand, 1.807 billion rand, and the final expenditure was 1.825 billion rand, and total expenditure of 101%, 1% overspending. Any projected savings that was realized in court service in the previous financial year were directed to the program reprioritization that was explained before. So, an ideal expenditure of 101%, there were 1% overspending on compensation of employees, but this was the basis of the previous year's audit. If I can come to the current financial year, it's on page 2 of the presentation. Court services at the end of February, the expenditure status, we were at 80%. Now, what is the major contributing factors for us not being as ideal? Firstly, these periodic payments. The first periodic payment that we have is quite problematic for us. It's a quarterly payment that will materialize before the end of the financial year. It's the DPD, the Department of Public Works payment, the property management payment. Now, head expenditure will come through under your goods and services expenditure. It's goods and services. I'll explain to you what transfers to provinces, municipalities means. So, under goods and services, we will expect our normal expenditure for the month of of master the interface, and then the outstanding property management expense approximately 129 million and it still needs to go through. We are on slide 3. I'm explaining the current 80% expenditure of core services. Under goods and services, we are on 75%. What I'm saying is that we expect our normal expenditure for the month still to come in, and then for approximately 120, 129 million rand for property management, it still needs to come through under goods and services. Then secondly, under buildings and other fixed structures, again, is a DPW payment. These payments that are basically still outstanding, and we expect they also then, if the expenditure comes in, that we will most probably spend 100% of our allocation. The third element for our current spending is going to be our current underspending under machinery and equipment. We received Treasury approval for the rollover of 114 million rand for the digital code recording system. Out of the rollover date was, we've managed to spend up to today 54 million rand. I mean, you know, this is a rollout of digital code recording, and we have in effect payment based on certain milestones being achieved by the service provider. We expect that there will be maybe unspent funds under this project at the end of the financial year. And because it's of a capital once-off nature, we'll ask for treasury rollover. So, core services, at the end of February, we were at 80%, and we expect that we will spend most of our funding and a possible rollover under machinery and equipment relating to the digital core recording project. If I can go to slide 4. Slide 4 will give you a sense of the MTF budget in allocations. The budget for core services will increase from the current 2.3 billion for next year to 2.7, then 3 billion, and then another 3.4 billion over the MTF period. Again, this may differ from the numbers presented yesterday, because the distinction is yesterday we talked about the program. Today we talk about the business or the branch or component called core services. There is an item that you, Jefferson, inquired on transfers to provinces and municipalities. Transfers to provinces and municipalities, we had a budget for the current financial year of 1.2 million. Now, since the end of June, we don't pay regional services council levies anymore. So, transfers to provinces and municipalities is your regional services council levies. But on slide 4, it gives you a sense of the various allocations for the various items for core services. This is a one view of the core services budget allocation. If I can go to the next slide. Similar budget of core service again, but here it shows you the budget per component or management. In treasury language we call it the sub-program. It gives you again a sense of the allocations for the various categories of courts. One noticeable or two of a few observations there, you will see the budget of the family advocate increasing from the current 56 million to 72 million. You will see facilities management, as we indicated before yesterday, increasing from 268 million to 466 million. So this slide again is the core service budget from a different angle. And then if you can go to slide 6 on page 3, it gives you again a different view of the budget. It gives you a sense of the budget allocations per region. Now again, these budgets are being influenced by budget bids, budget information submitted and requests submitted by the various regions looking at the staff establishment and then funding the operational cost of the regional, the various regions. But just give you a sense of the various allocations per region. Slide 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, and 15 gives you the breakdown of budget allocations per region. In essence, all the regions that have received their budget allocations, they are busy now, busy now with operational planning, and essentially the point is, from the 1st of April, they need to be ready, or they should be in the position to immediately start with spending. I would perhaps just quickly want to touch on slide 16. This is money that are being managed from national office. And some of these monies were, as I've indicated before, based on certain information, some of these money will be devolved to a region. For instance, government motor transport. It's a 30 million rand, there will be definitely an allocation to regions. But perhaps the area that I want to highlight is facilities management. And there's a budget for the current financial, for the new financial year of 466 million. The breakdown of it, firstly, there's capital works, your infrastructure spending. Your major capital works is 333 million. For day-to-day maintenance, now this is 22 million. This allocation will also be allocated to the various regions. For rehabilitation of our facilities, 71 million. In upgrading of infrastructure, 40 million. So this gives you a sense of on how the 466 million rand will be spent over the entire period. Chairperson, you also asked information on personnel establishment. Now, there are various ways in this slide 17 to present the establishment. It's a big structure, and when we extracted this information in November, we picked up the following situation. So what we try to do is maybe perhaps focus on the provinces, because a lot of people are being appointed in the provinces. We can provide you additional detail on vacancies per province, and even more information on the budget element, the personnel establishment at national office. But on page 9, slide 18, you will see the vacancy rate in the Eastern Cape, Gauteng, Limpopo, and then going on. But maybe not to take enough too much time of you. On the last slide, slide 23, will give you a summary. It gives you a sense of in court service, people that are being appointed in the court service environment, what is the vacancy rate. Now this was in November. We've talked about an average vacancy rate of 14%. We are in a position to give you a breakdown per post-class, post-category. The approved establishment of this court services will increase as new allocations are made to court services. You've seen the presentation yesterday of e-scheduler. What has happened, 345 posts has been approved for the regions. It will increase the establishment of court services. The funding has been devolved to the regions. It is just the appointment of the personnel in the case of the area, and that needs to be affected. But this is how we can present the information, but we can provide you detail on perhaps further detail if this may be needed. Thank you.
Right, but let me just get clarity from you, Johan. What you've now done with regard to the breakdown going forward, the NTF budget allocation for each division, that's really a first. Is that right? Because we heard from you the last time that one of the things that this does is it enables regions to start planning already from now going forward, knowing what approximately their budgets are going to be. So under those circumstances, if that is correct, then I won't be able to get a comparison in the way that you've done with the units per se in terms of the amount actually expended versus the amount appropriated for each of these regions. Or is there information?
When what should happen? As soon as the region has concluded their planning before the end of this current financial, before the end of the month, they need to provide us with cash expenditure projections for the new financial year. And then we can map it for you to give you a sense of what is the expenditure versus projection. We can even do that for the current financial
year. Because part of the problem is that not all your regional offices were established. We now have a situation where they will be in this financial year coming, the 2007-2008. So what I basically am looking for is not just these things, which says this is what they each going to get, the Eastern Cape's going to get X amount going forward. What I'm more interested in is, having gotten in 2007-2008 so much, how much did they expend and how much did they not expend? So that's something that we will be able to get per region.
Per region,
yeah. Okay. Then that's certainly something that when you start getting those reports, it'd be important for you to let us have on an ongoing basis.
Chief, isn't the value of this, the mere fact that allocation is now known for the immediate period?
I do understand.
Is that, for instance, the late allocation of a budget is no more than an excuse?
No, I hear what you're saying, and I think it's an excellent advancement on our previous system, because there was a whole lot of unknown factors that the regions were not able to then plan ahead of time and so on. What you're now saying is that at least there's a degree of certainty and they'll be able to understand what it is that they broadly can and can't do over the next while. That's good. But what I'm saying is that doesn't give me a full indication as to how they've actually been using that money and whether the problems in terms of the underspend relates to them, the vacancies, etc. It's very important that we get that kind of information going down, because otherwise what we do is we feed under court services. And then I think Simon Gianni is the person that's not doing his job, and in fact it could be a region down there. So I think that information will give us complete sense in future. So in future, when we get this kind of report, we get not only your MTEF allocations currently going forward, but we also get what was extended of those allocations and what was not, so that we can see per region who is doing what and so on. Okay. All right. Members, questions? Mr. Summer, Mr. Hubert, Imam? Okay. Let's limit our questions. We're still going to take the main presentation, so go ahead. Okay. Wrong person to ask the question, Mr. Chama. We're going to get to Mr. Gianni now. You can ask him whether he's going to spend the money. You can get to that.
Mr.
Hubert? Hold it over, please. Thank you. No, Mr. Chama. Mr. Hubert?
Thank you, Chair. My question is on slide 3, page 2. The machinery and equipment, where we only spend 48% of the budget. If I understood him correctly, we'll roll over that more or less 100 million. Is that correct? Now, my question is, if we couldn't spend half the money, why do we ask for a rollover? Are you going to be able to spend that? Because it's an addition to what you're going to get anyway.
It's the digital sound recording thing with the tenders that we've heard about yesterday as well. And so, but they'll explain more fully how the process works. One of the problems is that you have to go out and tender and get delivery of these specialized machines. And so the delays are not so much in the fact that they're not committed, but they only hand over the money once the equipment's installed. They won't hand over the money prior to delivery of the equipment. The equipment, of course, has to be gotten from a third party. But they'll explain more fully what the... So I think you must explain properly how this process works from scratch so that you know people here understand how that process works. I had Imam?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my question again is about the lower courts here. Right? I do understand now that this particular, you know, budget allocations here pertains directly to the court itself. It's not like we had yesterday, where there were other, you know, how can I say, sub-programs, which is part of the, but this is just the budget for the lower court here. If I look at the other facilities management, it applies to all the courts, and so on and so on. Right, okay. And I'm not happy here. If I look at the constitutional court, a substantial increase, which fine, but it's justifiable. Right? We look at the Supreme Court, very good. The High Court, good. Special High Court, I understand, fine. Yes, there are some other dynamics around that. Right? You come to the lower court, it's a very, very small increase here. And then that is where the bulk of the work of the courts are being performed. And there's been, you know, constant, you know, accusation of happiness about these courts. I you know, how do you explain that?
Okay.
Sandra, I will also try to assist Chairperson. The first question, and I try to anticipate the question by to explain the difference between the component and the sub-program. Why is there a difference between what we presented yesterday for the lower courts and today? What is different? What is it for the lower courts today 1.6 and not 1.9 as yesterday? The difference is the money in trust allocation of 100 million. Court services don't many get the allocation. Secondly, there's a security many allocation. Court services don't manage that part. So, I mean, the initial 1.9 is coming down to 1.6.
See, it's coming down again to a misunderstanding. We don't understand when you say lower court. We don't know what goes into that. Just the point that I think Mr. Hubert made yesterday when we talked about the constitutional court, and part of that is a training amount. We don't understand that training goes into constitutional court. We understand the constitutional court to mean the building of the constitutional court. So it becomes important when you do these tables for us to break them down. You can have this kind of a slide, which is really in your MTF publication, whatever. But then you break it down into an analysis for us so that we know that when Imam then talks about the lower court, he knows exactly what he's talking about. At this point, we don't. We just see lower court. You guys may know what goes into that, but we don't. We just see lower court and we think, oh, well, you know, these courts are not being properly funded. In fact, it's got nothing to do with how well or otherwise these courts are funded.
The second question on rollovers. We had a major project, and I've alluded to the digital court recording project. We've reprioritized 114 million into the project in the previous financial year. We needed to apply to National Treasury to get this money. Parliament approved the allocation to us during the adjustment estimate budget process. This is, it was in September, in October. In the past, when Parliament approved, yes, the rollover is now yours, to spend. So, after receiving the 114 million, I can confirm to you, 54 million of the 114 million has already been spent. But again, it's dependent on the delivery of the equipment, meaning the sign off of receipt of the equipment, installation there before we can effect payments. And this rollout is a across the country, all our courts. So it's a complex process. There's nothing wrong with applying for a rollover. The idea is to spend the money before the end of the financial year. But Treasury knows that capital projects runs over 12-month period. And so we will go to Treasury for Treasury and then eventually for Parliament to say, we are not going to approve this rollover application.
No, but I think what you need to do is to just give us a sense. Look, what happens? You've got money for a digital recording system. What happens then? You then have to go out on the tender. That takes a while. Then, let's say that is expedited and you get your tender. Now, physically what has to happen is that the machines need to be delivered. They need to be delivered at every single site. Only once I'm sitting in the court in Kupanath and I've got my digital recording system and I then say to national office, okay, or my regional office, wherever, this thing's now working, it's functioning, you can pay for it. Then payment gets done, although the allocation is up front. And so that gets staggered over a period of time going into the future. These machines are quite complex. I mean, they're not just delivered in a box and opened up and then they work. They're quite complex in the sense that they have to be installed and so on. So I think once you understand that process, you'll understand why it is that the money can't be paid. I mean, it would be bad management, really, if they were to pay the money up front. And so the reason for the rollover is really to ensure that practically we're getting, we know what we're getting and that we've ensured that what we've got has worked, et cetera, et cetera, and then only does the money. And that's basically how the contract is structured up. So I think we must take those kinds of issues and we must differentiate them from things like your vacancy. If they don't get filled and so on, then that creates problems and so on. And clearly when we appropriate money for vacancies and so on, we expect that vacancy will be filled in the next year. We don't expect it to go over 2 or 3 years for that matter. Of course, there are nuances around these issues. The composts, for example, even though they're vacant, could have been vacant because somebody has retired or somebody has died or, you know, all of those contingencies. So we also have to factor those in. But there is a big difference between understanding on chapter work and understanding on things that you know you can do in a particular way. Not just filling in vacancies for both. Okay, the other question?
Because the last question was with regards to the growth in the budget of the Constitutional Court. I mean, the growth rate in the lower courts, but I mean, in comparison with other sub programs. The allocation for the Constitutional Court is in May after an interaction between the Chief Justice and the Minister. Constitutional Court and the Chief Justice submit the budget request to the Minister. There's negotiations, and after the negotiations, there's confirmation. You can see that the Constitutional Court budget for the previous financial year originally was 28 million. And there was, as I explained yesterday, there were additional allocations to the Constitutional Court for judicial education, and the detailed reading we can provide to you. There were also an allocation for the travel and subsistence, international travel and subsistence of judges and magistrates. Now, initially, some of the expenditure of the magistrates were incurred at lower court level. Now, because of the decision to centralize the allocation is now available under the Constitution, under the Constitutional Court. Maybe Mrs. Kosana can also try to sit, to explain that.
But I think what you do is send us an explanatory memo on that, because that is a new development and something we're not too familiar with. So it would be very useful, I think. And then also, you know, explain in the analysis. When you locate something in the Constitutional Court vote or section, whatever it is that you're calling it, but if you allocate money there for judges in different courts, I think that must be stated. So if, for example, your international travel and so on also pertains to expense incurred by judges other than judges in the Constitutional Court, you need to state that in the report so that we have a clear sense of what is happening.
Can I just add, in terms of why we're doing this, obviously it's for accountability purposes, to make sure that, you know, any expenditure that goes off and that relates to the Constitutional Court must obviously be part of the Constitutional Court's budget.
And again, not everything in that is the Constitutional Court's budget. So I guess what I'm saying is let's have an explanatory memo so that we all understand what happens in that act. National Head Office. There's a different amount there, yeah. Okay. But they're not finished answering the questions, I think, so you want to factor that as well.
If I can perhaps conclude, I mean the allocation for, I mean, the discussion on the allocation for the lower court, as I said yesterday, I mean the lower court will share in the provision for government motor transport, they will share in the provision for facilities management. As soon as the regions and interactive with national office with business plans during the month of March, then this money will be allocated to the regions. Question on the positioning of the Constitutional Court. As I said, I've tried to give you three views. There are three views of a budget allocation. You can see it per item. You can see it per organizational component, region, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal. And you can see it per sub-program. It's the same information, you may state it differently. The Constitutional Court, their budget are not part of the Gauteng budget. Their budget as the family advocate are being managed from national office.
But they're different. Mrs. Cameron's worried about the fact that they look like, but they're not different amounts. They're the same amounts, Mrs. Cameron. Okay. No, then that's fine. You've now answered your question. You're saying that they're different perspectives, and so this gives you the same vote on the different categories of votes. Okay. All right. Let's then proceed, Mr. Gianni. Your presentation today.
Chancellor, thanks a lot. If we could just get back to my presentation then.
This document,
but the 2NTA. This one?
No, that's the other one. It's the one that we've already got.
It's
a very thick one.
Well, mine is the color one.
Yeah. Because he's colorblind, so he gets the color version. Yes, it's this thick one that you've already received a while ago. You received it last week, okay? Pardon? No? You've got another copy today, but you received this one previously. You should have. Because mine has been indexed a long time ago, since the BC extension. What happens is that they send us one copy, she then indexes it when she posts that to be given to me with an idea of the copy as well. So, this thing is getting very irritating. I mean, yesterday people didn't have documents that I thought that they'd gotten last week for me. Please do a, you know, together with Ms. Saitan, sit down and do a proper audit of every single document so that you can see what is and isn't. I mean, the whole point of asking Mr. Gianni and them to send us documents early is so that members can read it. I mean, I had this idea that members had it over the weekend. So I'm not sure what is going on with it. Why was it done on the weekend? Why is it that when I asked, you were on leave on Thursday and Friday, when I asked committee services to give me somebody to assist, there was a reason for that, so that members can get their documents before the weekend. I specifically said so, even though I was sick at home. Now, I mean, this is unacceptable, and I hope that you relay this to the head of your station. Because I'm very sick and tired. I've already said to them that I'd want two committee secretaries for a reason. This is not, you know, sports and recreation and so on that meets once a week. And we cannot get by with one secretary. So you please write them a letter and explain to them and express our intense irritation about it. Because this isn't brain surgery. This is getting documents photocopied and out in time. That's all it is. I do apologize for that. I really was under the impression that my instructions had been followed and that members got it at least by Friday. So I do apologize, and I know that. So, Mr. Gianni, please just understand that members haven't had too long to engage with your documents. As you know, we sat here all of yesterday with other stuff. So,
thank you, Chair. Chair, in terms of today's presentation, because the Minister as well as the DG covered quite a great deal of issues under court services, so without any duplication, I've indicated as we shall not repeat, and perhaps maybe we'll allow for questions on those if there are questions, because already that information is available. Just on page 2 or slide 2, that indicates the approach that we will take in terms of this presentation. Firstly, we will indicate our responsibility in the cluster, what we're doing as far as the planning for this year. We'll also more deal about the question that Mr. Kamara raises about the, you know, priorities for court services in the year 2007. So we'll deal quite at length with those issues. We will briefly just also highlight which were mostly covered in the Minister's and the DG's presentation on the achievements to date in relation to the current financial year. The budget management, I wouldn't deal with that. Mr. Johnson has dealt with that. Suffice to say that I can just highlight some of the project money that lies in the National Office. We will then conclude, and I think in terms of our conclusion, we'll highlight some of the challenges in terms of the, going ahead. Chair, the approach that is slide 4, that we will, you know, follow in this regard. Of course, this is based on the three key strategic objectives of the department, in terms of which we as court services have a responsibility of the implementation. I've already alluded to you in terms of how we are divided in court services. We have got those 5 programs, and I've already introduced people that are heading those programs. Slide 5, that deals with mostly the priorities in terms of the improvement, service delivery improvement, for the last financial year. And I'll touch a little bit, because most of these issues were referred in the Minister's and the DG's input on the infrastructure development. And in here, I guess, if there are additional information, we have prepared a document which will be circulated later on that gives a much detailed information in terms of the facilities, where we're planning these, and where, you know, some of these issues, are going to be looked at in terms of this new financial year. I'll also deal with the support to the vulnerable groups, and that relates to the program 3 activities. We'll also deal with the case flow, the court performance. Will touch much of the issues that were raised both at the modernization level as well as the court management level. Of course, without duplicating and repeating what was said, yesterday. We will also look at the issue in terms of the service delivery, where our priorities are going to be in terms of the next financial year. Chair, on slide number 6, I just want to begin because to indicate that our action plans also cut across government at large. As you know, we served in the JCPS structure, or the JCPS, one of the issues that dealt with that relates to the security. And so in that regard, our programs or action plans are also aligned with the broader government perspective. And as I've indicated previously, Chair, that one of the responsibilities that we have in court services, we are also chairing one of the cluster subcommittee, which is called the Development Committee. And it is in that respect that we would like to deal with some of the issues that, you know. Chair, just on the infrastructure development, I think at the broader level, we have a structure that I've alluded to previously, that some of the issues that we raised in terms of how to integrate our planning process with the rest of government, more particularly on the local government structure. So we do participate, I think, at that intergovernmental level. We do have also the IP and special development framework where we interface with the issues that relate to the municipalities. And I think most of our priorities with regard to infrastructure development, I'm talking about the new priorities, there's that interface, and I think that we have you know, indicated. I think this will be containing the detailed aspect in terms of just looking at how we are planning our infrastructure development. Chair, the third point on the integration as well, as you know, as a cluster, the focus is on the 169 hotspots, you know, the crime hotspot areas that are, you know, linked to the cluster as a whole. And so our infrastructure development also talks to that, you know, integration with the rest of the cluster. Chair, on slide 7, I just, for information's sake, because these issues around the IJS, which is an integrated justice, you know, system, as far as how we are implementing our programs at a practical level on the ground. As I've indicated previously, I think that we have now established provincial development committee, and their main mandate is to make sure that that integration at operational level does take place. Last year, I think one of the priorities and issues that we dealt with was the establishment of those. We have now established the development committees in all the provinces just to make sure that issues of integration are now dealt with at the operational level. Then the main themes in terms of our cluster priorities, and I think Sharon has said much, I'm not going to deal in detail with the IJS program at the IT level. The issues of integration, how are we in the development of our IT infrastructure, ensuring that they have integration right across the cluster. It is but one of those committees that I think the department chairs just to ensure that that alignment takes place. However, I want to indicate as well that as far as that integration is concerned, there are still major challenges, and part of the challenges relates to the Department of Home Affairs. As you know, Department of Home Affairs was only brought late to the cluster. So there are a lot of other infrastructure development that relates to IT that would like to make sure that the systems that Home Affairs, you know, manages, that those systems are also integrated with the rest of the cluster. And I think one of the major projects that they deal with is the harness that you know, relates to it. So at the cluster level, in terms of that responsibility, there are those issues that we're looking at. The chair as well, issues of the criminal justice system and improving the effectiveness thereof, those are part of the major projects, I mean the major themes of our program of government that we're going to be focusing on. And in particular with regard to the functioning of courts and the project that relates to the backlog that I made reference to, I think, on the some time ago when I was here. However, what I want to indicate is that the questions that were raised under this particular project, we have not as yet finalized the report to you, Chair. I think we still owe you that report. We're meeting in March, I think, just to take into account some of the issues that were raised in terms of what needs to improve in relation to the case backlog. And we expect, I think, once we have that meeting in March, then to fully give you a report. We did not want to give you a piecemeal report. We wanted to integrate most of the issues that were raised in that you know, presentation so that it's integrated with that report. I must apologize for the delay. I think the issue, I think our expectation, we wanted to submit this information quite early so that we are enabled. But the challenge that we faced is that because this is a cluster project, we have not been able to get the relevant role players, you know, to be part of the meeting. It's only, I think, last week that we have been able to set up that meeting, which is going to occur in March, just to make sure that we deal with those issues that were raised during my briefing. Chair, on slide number 8, I'm going to skip
skip that because that relates to the IT infrastructure, and I think Sharon yesterday presented quite in great details what we are doing at the platform to deal with those issues. Similarly, slide number 9, I'm going to skip. What I would like us maybe to focus on, and this relates to the priorities for the next one inside there, that is slide 10. Of course, as you know, that our strategic document is an evolving document. Of course, it is a document that covers a broader spectrum in terms of the period of implementation. So our prioritization this year will be to deal with those issues that also form part of our strategy as a department, those that have not been achieved. One of the key issues that core services is going to deal with, and I think this relates to the reorganization within the department, is to reposition the national office so that the national office is no longer seized with operational matters, that most of these issues, as they get transferred to the regions, that the role of the national office becomes more of an analysis kind of approach that really tries to implement and make sure that the reports that are being required, that there is a more proper alignment in terms of policy development with the practices. So our priorities in this financial year is to reposition court service so that it's more focused on ensuring that the information that comes from the ground, that there's that capacity to analyze and to enable the planning process nationally, also to advise the minister on any subsequent issues that relate to policy development. So that's the focus that we're going to look at. And then in detail, I think on the same slide, slide 10, some of the issues that we would focus on this year relates to the family law services, the maintenance, as well as the justice, child justice issues, which I think the minister in brief also touched some of those issues. The major issue relates to the improvement of court performance. You'll see, I think, some of the information as we deal with court performance, especially in terms of the modernization aspect, because that is one of the biggest projects that the department is embarking upon this year. So we're going to be playing a very critical role of ensuring that the modernization is more or less sustained at the court level. And I think we'll talk more in terms of what is being done, I think, later on through this presentation. Facilities management is but one of the priorities, as well as you know, as the budget grows, as Mr. Johnson has indicated, we also have to increase our size in terms of development of size, both in terms of the new project as well as the maintenance of the current facilities, of course. On the issue of the budget management as well, and I think it is our emphasis this year, we would also like to improve our financial management to ensure that, on a regular basis, that the management of budget is attended to, that we don't have to wait and have these problems later towards the end of the year. So that's going to be one of the issues that we're going to look at. With regard to the last program, but not the least, extending the family advocate offices, as I've indicated previously, the priority here is to extend the services to areas, especially predominantly those previously disadvantaged areas that the family advocate services are not, as we speak at the moment, servicing. So our priority is in there is to extend the services to those areas. If we could then move to, because the next slide deals with the financial aspects, so I would like us to move to slide 13. Slide 13. That deals with the achievements. I mean, this is progress with regard to the infrastructure development. We've just given you the numbers in terms of, what has been achieved and also what we're still planning. And, a more detailed aspect of this, I think, is contained in the narrative that I've just promised that we'll make available in case there are needs for that. But we've just presented to you exactly what has been able to achieve, and I think these are covered mostly in the minister's presentation. I think this is just the detail of those areas that have been covered. That is slide 13. Similarly, on slide 14, I think without any waste of time, I would also just not really rehash what the minister mentioned, but just suffice to say that I think the issue that I want to relate to, I think relates to the infrastructure with regard to the this provision of user-friendly facilities for the disabled persons, and which is an issue that I think this committee has raised with the department continuously. So this year, as I've indicated, we are also planning to increase the size of increasing the size for making those services available, you know, to other areas that we've not covered. So to date, we have only provided 35 courts with the facilities, just to enable people to have the easy access, especially the disabled people, in terms of our infrastructure. Of course, as I've indicated, that number is indicated exactly where, how we have broken it down in terms of the actual construction as well as the establishment of the infrastructure. Then the issue also raised, which was raised with regard to the presentation I did, was the progress with regard to the demarcation of the magisterial boundaries. Mr. Skosana is here, and I think if there are any detailed aspects of it, I will deal with those. But I must suffice to indicate that it is one of the projects that this year we're going to prioritize and make sure that the minister is able to finally finalize the re-demarcation process. As we speak, and as I've indicated last time, is that we are revisiting all provinces now just to find that alignment where we may have not have dealt with the process properly with regard to the alignment, with regard to the local government structures. So that process is also ongoing, and this year we are intending to finalize it so that the constitutional amendments that have been effected have been dealt with. Suffice to say that it is only in some of the areas where there is some kind of difficulties with regard to the cross-boundary areas that we still experience some difficulties with regard to those. But it is an issue that this year we hope to finalize. Chair, with your permission on slide 15, I would not like to deal with that in detail because there was a presentation on this last time that I made on this. For the sake of time, I think we can only come back to this once if there are questions. So slide 15 deals with the case deadlock. That's one of the issues that we're going to be prioritizing this year. Then on slide 16 as well, it's also the same kind of set that I gave you last time in terms of where we are with regard to the rollout of the or the implementation of that particular project. Chair, then slide 17 deals with the court management. This is also just to give you much detailed aspect in terms of what we have done to date with regard to the implementation of the rollout of the Riyakhabusha. I think we do provide information in here in terms of what we have been able to achieve, both at the training aspect and the development of that capacity, because the appointment of court managers per se is not a solution unless there is accompanied with an appropriate training. That is slide 17. So there is, I think, if you look at the first bullet, a development program that we have set up, which looked at the recruitment or perhaps the training of about 100 court managers, just to enable them to have the proper, skills. And that project has just been completed last year. It's only now that we will be looking and monitoring the implementation thereof, just to see whether the kind of skills that people have been sort of exposed to, whether really it's improving services right on the ground. But of course, in terms of moving forward with regard to the court management development, I think as the part of the process of reshaping the Justice College, it is but one of the projects that is going to be located within the realm of the training within the Justice College to deal with it. So we also give you some steps in terms of, I think, which is an issue that the Minister alluded to in a presentation. How many court managers to date we have been able to appoint, both at the area level as well as the district level, and also at the provincial level, because that is slide 17. What we have agreed to in the department is that in each and every province will have what we call a court ops manager, whose responsibility will be, to look after all court operational issues and have an interface with the National Office of Court Services, just to make sure that all issues that we have planned for nationally, that there is an implementation program in each and every project, I mean of the provinces. Only here, or rather, need to indicate that because this is a new phenomenon, we've only appointed 6 court ops managers. As you know, we've got about 9 provinces. We still, have 3 that are still outstanding, and I think regions are in the process of completing their picture as far as the. But also aligned to this is also to ensure that, as far as the high courts are concerned, that there is a dedicated attention in terms of improving the management of the high courts. And it is in that respect that for high courts per se, we have also tried to look at the appropriate level of managers that needs to be above the level of the ordinary magisterial court to deal with the issues that relate to management of issues at the court, at the high court level. So that was done. One of the issues that we have also raised continuously, I think, is with regard to the implementation of the case flow management, was to change the position of our registrars. As you know, previously our registrars were more administrative focused, and there was very little emphasis on the quasi-judicial aspect. So we also give you an update here in terms of saying that we have now changed all of those positions. And all our registrars, the requirement is that they should be legally qualified so that they are able to assist the judiciary in dealing with their court-related issues. So that has been done. The only outstanding aspect which we are still dealing with at the Justice College is to finalize the curriculum for the training of the registrars so that the registrars, as they get appointed, that there is an attendant program that tries and deal with the, their kind of skills. And then, Chair, as well, the issue that you raised yesterday in terms of these modernization programs, what is actually the sustainable infrastructure that we are building, both in terms of the physical infrastructure, but particularly in relation to the human resources? As the issue that was mentioned several in the presentation by both the Minister as well as the DG and Sharon, we have also, I think, as I will indicate later on, in terms of this program, what capacity we have created in all courts, those that we have rolled out the e-schedule to enable those courts to deal with the matters. The issue of the delegations, and I think a reference was made to this with regard to the court managers, that has not been finalized, and it is but one of those issues that, we also have to focus on this year. Chair, page 18, I wouldn't really also emphasize much, suffice to say that the figures that are mentioned in terms of the size that we've been able to roll out to the e-schedule, which is actually but one of the tools to support the case flow management. I can share with your permission as well. I have made copies available with regard to your request previously when I made the presentation on the court case backlog. You requested that the guidelines of the case flow management should be circulated to members as a background in terms of what this entails. So we do have a few copies that we have put there, and I guess I think at the appropriate level this can be submitted to members just to look at what that entails. Yes, in fact the e-schedule is the electronic version of the case flow management issue. Chair, the issue around the video postponement, and we also give you the set in terms of what we have done to date, and the DG did make mention of the fact that we are on the verge, or perhaps we are planning to roll out the video postponement to the rest of the country. We have currently just finalized the costing aspect thereof, but what is going to be important is the finalization of the legislation in relation that would enable video postponement to be done in our courses. You know, at the moment we're only doing it on a pilot basis, and I think the legislative branch, it is but one of the issues that this year they're going to look at towards dealing with. The digital court recording system as well, I think the DG made reference to this, but it will indicate exactly where, if there is more information required, where the system has been rolled to date, and which are the areas that are still outstanding. Transcription services as well, it is because this goes hand in hand with the the court recording systems. We have now, I think as it was indicated in the first few days, that it's now provincialized, the transcription services, just to make sure that the quality of the transcribing is also improved and able the managers on the ground, particularly the reason of this level, to manage this kind of contract, because that still remains an issue as we speak at the moment, that given the fact that in the past we had the multitude of service providers providing transcription services, there was a mixed bag in terms of the quality of services, and I think the issue of appointing one service provider per province was to enable that we could really be able to manage this kind of contracts. In the past, I think we had a multitude of them. It was quite difficult to manage the quality of services. So it is, but one of those issues that this year we're going to look at the scanning solution, which also goes hand in hand with the e-cellula, and I think the DG did make reference to this. We have just tested one part, which is in Genesis. The idea is to ensure that as we roll out the e-cellula, that the scanning solution also forms part of it. This is to enable us to ensure that firstly we minimize the loss of code records, but also to ensure that at the finger of, you know, at the touch of the button, that codes are enabled to have information readily available through the e-cellula, which is but one of the systems that was introduced to you there. Okay, then on 19 is just to give you the case flow management, the kind of governance structure that, you know, established in all provinces. Of course, I must also indicate that the implementation of the guidelines by the lower court managers, we're not going to be seeing results quite quicker because it is but a process which required a lot of, you know, capacity building amongst our courts to minimize the current problems that the courts, you know, face with regards to case management. Of course, we have now in all provinces structures that have been established, except for few provinces, Gauteng still presents a challenge where provincially they are able to sit and look globally with regard to issues that pertain to the management of cases. In fact, coincidentally, yesterday I was here in the Western Cape looking at the provincial case management process, and one is really quite impressed with the kind of developments that are happening with regard to make sure that the judiciary is taking one voice in terms of how case flow management needs to be implemented, and that the judiciary or the judge president within a province plays a critical role in managing the role players that form part of the criminal justice system. So, I don't want to repeat this to the page 19 because most of those issues are... Then the video remand system, we've just finalized the proof of concept as I've indicated, and we've indicated to you from the audit or the evaluation that we've done, what are the benefits that we've achieved today with regard to the implementation of a particular project in the KZN. We've been able to minimize the security risks that are attended to with regard to the accused that normally go to court just for postponement letters that are in custody. So we've been able to minimize the trafficking of people into the court level so that they are postponed, their cases have been postponed, the correctional facilities where they are located. Of course, we also have some logistical nightmare that are associated with the daily transportation of, you know, awaiting trial prisoners that we have been able to minimize with the sense that now the correctional facilities are more able to emphasize or focus on their issues than to be transporting people. But also with regard to the transportation costs, we've been able to minimize the transportation costs relating to the transportation of witnesses to court. Okay, I think that information was provided for in terms of where the project currently is. It's only in those two courts, that is Durban as well as Pinetown, which are linked to the Westfield prison where this project was started. I've indicated what we're still doing with regard to the planning for the rollout of that process of the video postponement. So then on slide 21, which deals with the e-cellula, we just have given you an indication how many sites we've been able to cover, and I think these sites were also indicated in the minister's presentation. But we've also given you, you know, just the number of, just starting from September 2006 when this project was launched, giving you up to February 2007, how much, you know, courts we've been able to cover. And so we stand at 332 as we speak at the moment. However, I also want to just indicate, just before I exit from this, that with regard to the deployment of the e-cellula as well as the digital court recording machines, the DG yesterday, with regard to the digital recording machines, I mean, the day before yesterday, mentioned the issue around the stenographer's position that we have now changed to focus on court-related issues to support the judiciary in managing, you know, that system, so that the issues of recording as well are sort of handled in a way, in a manner in which it assists to minimize the loss of records as far as the courts are concerned. We also have 6 files that the DG indicated with regard to the court recording or the archiving system. In fact, we're piloting at 6 lower courts, looking at what is really the appropriate system to enable our courts to have information, all documents, instead of being, you know, in the way in which they are currently being electronically available to all courts. What would that also ultimately, the outcome thereof? We would firstly want to improve the management of records at the court level. Secondly, we also improve the management of space at the court level. As you know, that the great deal of our space at the court level is taken up by those records that are filed. And some of, I think there was an allusion made yesterday or so that some of the records are in the passages in the court. We want to establish what the DG made reference to, an off-site storage, where we would enable all those documents to be stored centrally, and that upon the request of each and every court, then they can be made available. I think we do have a solution that in government has been sort of produced, and I think in the Department of Justice we want to, you know, to make that system also be considered for our solution. So it is, but one of the issues that in this financial year we're going to be looking at to improve the recording of, I mean, the storage of the recording. On the e-schedule now, we have to date appointed 354 personnel. These are new appointments, which are also in keeping with the number of sites that we have got, about 356 to date, 354 sites, which is slightly an increase of the number that the minister gave, because that number did not include March, so we have 22 new additional sites for March. That makes the figure to be 354. So that's the number of court personnel that we have given budgets to the regions to appoint. And of course, what we have also done, just to ensure that we improve the capacity, we have suggested that the position where these people have to be appointed or position in which they have to be, you know, kept, it must be something that, you know, improves the skills. In fact, we have suggested that they should be on the level 5, which is much of a higher position than the ordinary administrative clerk, because here we require people with much IT, you know, knowledge in terms of assisting the court in managing the, because we want to take the whole responsibility of managing the staff that relates to the court performance. So it is in that regard that we have, you know, put this emphasis that I think if we're to improve the management of our statistics, we need to make sure that the people that have been appointed are people that would add value to the system. Chair, with your permission, if I could go to slide 22, and that deals with the program 3, that is the vulnerable groups. I think we've also given you some information in terms of what they've been able to do to date with regard to the implementation of the SONDO. The support infrastructure that we've created in relation to the human resources, we have created now almost, of course, the picture is not as satisfactory in the sense that we still have a lot of other, you know, issues to cover with regard to the opponent. But what we have indicated, these are the additional resources that we have added on top of those that we have. We have to date, I think, appointed legally qualified maintenance officers, 68 of those. That have been trained. We have also, in terms of that, also the legal intent appointed about 83 just to assist as far as the maintenance issues are concerned. But in here, I need to pause because the approach that we're going to be adopting, you know, this year with regard to the maintenance, but I think the DG in some and to some degree did make reference to our approach with regard to how we want to deal with the issues that relates to FENA-related issues. One of the issues is to empower people that come to court with complaints on maintenance. As you know, the current system is not geared towards assisting people to look at other alternative ways of dealing with their disputes, because more people want to litigate even on smaller issues if they were going to be capacitated that they can deal with. One of the issues that on maintenance we would like to focus on this year is to build the mediation services amongst the court personnel so that there is more focus on assisting parties that come to court to settle their issues in a manner that would not require them to go to court and so on. So it is an area that we're going to be collaborating with the NGO sector, in particular the paralegals. I think the minister has requested us to look broadly in terms of how paralegals can assist in terms of creating that capacity at the court level so that our administrative officers can just focus on the purely administrative issues. But where we need to intervene and assist families, I think they were the requirement of mediation services required. We also need to have that appropriate capacity. So it is one of those issues that perhaps this year we're going to look at as well. Okay, the last but not least, the second but not the issue on the family court. As you know, this is a project that was started a long time ago, and it's almost now at the time at which we want to conclude on this. And I think one of the issues that the minister has made reference to is to extend some of the jurisdiction of our regional court to deal with the civil matters. And part of the civil jurisdiction is going to relate to the family courts. Of course, in here, the suggestion is also to ensure that we don't lose the focus and the prioritization on family law issues, and that's why the family courts will still play that pivotal role in terms of ensuring that those issues are being kept. We have also given you the steps in terms of what we have as far as that particular project is concerned, you know, how many people we have appointed, in addition to those that we have at the moment. We have indicated 68 maintenance officers, and also 108 maintenance, clerks that have been appointed to deal with that. In addition to this, there's an ongoing program to build that capacity. We have now developed what we call a leadership program for family matters. We call it the family law leadership. There are about 100 learners that this year will undergo their training. It is but one of the endeavors to try and improve the services of the family law and domestic violence matters at the court level. The issue that relates to the alternative dispute resolution, and that includes the issue of the restorative justice, is but one of the issues that I think this year there is going to be a dedicated attention, I think, from the cluster perspective, but also at the department level. I think, as you know, part of the problem that courts are faced with is that most of our courts are not implementing these other alternative sentencing options that are available. Particularly, the infrastructure may not be there. If services are required from the Department of Correctional Services to provide those facilities, this year we have established a restorative justice project, which we would at a cluster level make sure that we sort of develop a plan in terms of how do we assist our judiciary or our courts in passing appropriate sentences where people should not be sentenced to long-term imprisonment, that there may be other alternative means that are being provided to our courts. So it is that project that this year we're going to look at, to deal with it. On page or the slide 23, the Deputy Minister did make reference that the rollout of small claim court is also one of the issues that this year we're going to focus on. And I think aligned to the project that we'll be running with some of the donor-funded projects. We have now, I think, within the program, vulnerable groups also now have a dedicated focus on it, so that small claims courts are not just looked upon as an additional, but that they also have a very focal attention. One of our priorities this year, in terms of our plans, is to, where possible, to extend the services of the small claims court to all, especially to those areas currently that don't have those services. Of course, it is a project that we are managing jointly with the legal profession because, as you know, this project is also highly dependent upon the support from the legal profession. But I'm glad because the numbers we have read, I think, in detail that the small claims court, if one looks at the picture last year, we are now able to increase the numbers to those other areas. One of the critical issues that relates to the department, which continuously was raised in this committee, was what infrastructure are we creating at the court level to make sure that small claims court also receive that kind of prioritization. So this program also tries to respond to that by making sure that there is a continuous approach in terms of looking at how small claims court needs to be supported in that regard to deal with these issues. But I think at the policy level, we also want to let you know that there are a lot of issues that were raised with regard to the current legislation on the Small Claims Court. Some people were arguing for an extension of the jurisdiction. Some people were arguing for, you know, the personnel to support the infrastructure at the Small Claims Court level. It is a project that is led by the Deputy Minister, and we hope that I think this year we'll be able at the policy level also to respond to some of the challenges that are being faced with regard to the Small Claims Court. The Children's Court, we have also, as part of the our response to that act, as you know, it is a act that was finalized by the Department of Social Development. We have also, as part of our response, we've also created some kind of structure to deal with that responsibility that we have as far as the department is concerned. But this also includes, other than just the creation of administrative clerk posts, the issue of training that this year we're going to be looking at. Children in conflict with the law, which is actually a cluster problem, we have now, because this is also one of the projects that is managed by the vulnerable groups, and it has it's an intersectoral project. We are on a continuous basis paying attention to children that are in prison. I think yesterday the figure was given in terms of where we are currently, and I think the pleasing thing is that the numbers are going down. But one of the issues that we have raised as a cluster that this committee is going to be looking at, whether just bringing down the numbers is it actually solving the problem, because if you look at the figures, we continuously on a yearly basis we are reducing the figures, but these figures keep on increasing again. One of the issues is to interrogate our interventions that we have, you know, for example, the intervention program, I mean the intervention program that the prosecutors are looking at in terms of, with regard to children, whether those kind of responses are they adequate to address this kind of problem. And one of the issues I think that relates to this directorate is just to have a broader perspective that would advise the cluster in terms of what are the meaningful interventions that would ensure that children are properly capacitated, or perhaps that we properly divert children from the criminal justice system. But this is also an issue that relates to the restorative justice issue that I've raised, because so long as communities are not empowered to deal with the issues of crime, so long as we make crime to be the responsibility of government, we forever want to be pumping a lot of resources to deal with this issue. So one of the interventions that is the cluster we're going to be doing this year, one of the priorities of government is also to reshape what used to be in the past the police forums in the provinces, which now needs to be integrated throughout the entire cluster. Part of the issue is to build capacity in terms of our interface with the community so that issues of crime are no longer seen as the domain of government. That societies and their small respect can also contribute towards alleviating issues of crime. And I think one of the IDR process that the minister made reference to, it is one of the issues that will respond to this, because in there we want to create capacity to communities so that issues of crime, especially your petty issues that can be solved, that there is a framework in terms of which communities are being assisted to deal with those issues. Chair, the extension of the dedicated courts will also receive attention this year, and we've also taken the heat that, the suggestion last year that we some time that you indicated, Chair, that the focus on our sexual offences court should not be attended to as an adjunct or perhaps as an additional infrastructure to our court, but it must integrate with the rest of the court system. So we have had that rethink, and I think our focus in here as well in terms of the extension of those services is to make sure that our sexual offences are mainstream with regard to the rest of the court services that are being provided. And this also relates to the commercial, crime courts. We have, I think, as I've provided the stats, and we have this information now, extended the commercial courts to other areas that previously were not there, like the Western Cape. We currently busy with the Bloemfontein region or office to ensure that the commercial court is also transported to that area. The last issue that I did not mention on this program is the victim support program. It is also one of the issues that this year we're going to focus on, because one of the issues that we continuously as a criminal justice system have to be aware about is how do we get the victims involved in the solution of crimes. We have had this victim service charter that we have provided the steps in terms of what we have done today with regard to the planning. But of course, as far as the department is concerned, our services need to really to be repositioned so that the victims also are being assisted in terms of mostly, I mean, the sexual offenses court is one of those interventions, but there's also a broader problem that as far as this problem is concerned, we want to look at the issues that relate to how we interface and assist you know, the victims of crime. Chair, the next slide that deals with the budget management, I'm going to skip that because Mr. Thompson has dealt with that slide from 25 up to 31, except for slide 30 that I would just, because these are the project money that perhaps Mr. Johnson did not provide you, but I just needed to give you an indication in terms of how the budget has been allocated for the next 3 years with regard to the some of the projects that are earmarked by Treasury that we are managing nationally. Of course, the implementation is in the provinces that we provide budget for. So we have budget that has been set aside for that deals with the transformation and that deals with the ADR process. We also have budget that has been set aside for women in justice, education, and also the implementation of the victims charter. As you know, one of the transformation initiatives around the Chief Justice Office is to encourage or perhaps to promote the acceleration of women into the judiciary. So there is a budget that we have requested Treasury to provide in that regard for us to be able to deal with them. There is also budget for generally for the transformation of the judiciary that we have also given you for the next 3 years. We also have the budget for the review of the criminal justice as well as the civil justice system that we've requested to Treasury. Though I think the focus to date is on the criminal justice system, but we have now been asking if it's going to be the planning process for this year that the civil justice system also needs to be attended to. We'll come more, I think, with the information on this once we begin the project. On the demarcation of the Mediterranean district, there is also a money that we have set aside for the particular project. Then, in terms of increasing the personnel for the High Court, I mean for the court generally, and this relates to the new High Courts, we also provided you money there that we have set aside for the new High Court once the fund legislation is finalized. We've also given money for the development aspect of the court managers in all courts. And then there's also just a general capacity that relates to the improvement of numbers of posts in courts that this year we're going to be focusing on. We've given you the money that Treasury has allocated for the next, and I think that's where most of the increase comes, you know, in this. And I think this would enable us to deal with the issues that relate to the lack of capacity. On program three, the vulnerable groups, we have that budget that deals with the family courts, maintenance, equality courts. As you know, on the equality courts, that's why it has been given that the bigger slides, because it is but one of the projects that to date we have not dealt much with it. And I think our issue is to increase both the jurisprudence with regard to the equality court, but also the infrastructure that is required to manage that. So that budget is going to be, you know, earmarked for those issues. We've just given you all the money that we have for as far as the that vulnerable group is concerned. Then on the case flow management and the reduction of the case backlog, we've also given you the figure that Treasury is allocated to the department for managing, you know, the case flow as far as the courts are concerned. And this is one of the biggest areas that I think Treasury has been very sympathetic to our plea. Chair, then on slide 31, I wouldn't really feel it. Then slide 32 deals with the action plan. With your permission, Chair, I'm not going to get into details, but we have attached the action plan for this year that talks to these issues that I've raised, as I've indicated, in my introduction here. This covers most of the areas that, you know, court services will be dealing with. For the sake of time, I won't really repeat most of these issues and just hastily then just deal with the last presentation, and that relates to the seminar booking, and that is slide I'll come back to the family court is slide 55. I'll come back to the other issues that relate to the challenges. Chairs, I've indicated to you, this is the section that was created some time ago, in which continuously requires to be capacitated, because part of the problems that we have with regard to crime is our interventions that are not sufficient to deal with the prevention side of it. And so the family advocates that is slide 55. We've really given you our approach that we've adopted to date. Firstly, just to increase the numbers of the family advocates, especially in those areas that currently we are not servicing. We can provide a detailed access in terms of where these additional sites are going to be created for the services of the family advocates. But also, as I've indicated previously, that we've always had this challenge of the family counselors, in the sense that the response from provinces was not up to satisfactory to all of us. And I think we've now been given that leeway to create this capacity of the family counselors. And part of their budget as well that Mr. Johnson made reference to is also targeted towards increasing the capacity of the family advocates to deal with those issues. Chair, then on slide 60, because that deal mostly with the mandate of the family advocate. We just attach the information just to enable members just to look at what really the family advocates do in the context of their work that they do. We have also this year looked at because this issue of the implementation of the Hague Convention, it has also been one of the issues that the department have not been dealing with more properly. As you know, that the chief family advocates play a central role in terms of their particular convention. And this year we have now looked at the possibility of creating her, chief director, so that is able to take the responsibility of managing those issues that relate to the implementation of the Hague Convention matters. For the sake of time, Chair, I wouldn't deal much with the more operational issues that relate to the matters that they've dealt with. But we've also attached, I think just for the benefit of members, just the issues that, matters that they've been able to finalize. And this is part of the additional report that we would provide, I think, to the chair as well. But if you look at the slide 65 to 67, those are the operational issues. We give you some steps each center what they've been able to do in terms of their methods for this year, and also the steps in terms of the Hague steps convention. I mean the Hague steps that is on slide 71. So that is more or less the picture with regard to the family advocates. And I think Ms. Siabi is here, and I think if there's additional information with regard to this, we'll be able to interact with them. We have also just indicated some of the challenges that we have as far as court services, and that is actually the last slide, 72. But this really, I think, in part deals with the family advocate's responsibility as well with regard to the services that they provide. But also, our major challenge relates to the functioning of the court. We haven't provided you the detailed aspect of the performance of the court. I think this is in the narrative report that we provide. The figures this year in terms of the performance of courts is slightly a bit lower than last year. And there are various issues that, are a cause to that. Most of them relate to implementation of this case flow management, as I've indicated. It's a project that currently, as you speak, it's not wholeheartedly, I think, embraced in all provinces. In spite of the appointment of court managers, you still have challenges that judicial officers still have to look at, especially in terms of managing, you know, the court performance on a regular basis, because the stats are not pleasing this year as far as the performance of courts are concerned. So we have also provided that, I think it's part of the narrative report as far as this. But as I've indicated to you, most of the challenges is to deal with the case backlog this year, and just to make sure that, you know, those issues are being attended to. I think I've dealt with most of the issues with regard to the expansion of the family advocate offices, and also the issue with regard to the increasing the capacity with regard to our courts, both in terms of creating more posts, but also in relation to the training program to change the attitude of personnel within the court. Also the issues with regard to facilities, the DG did allude to this aspect that I think the budget that we had is just a drop in the oceans and the needs and the challenges that we still face with regard to the facilities. We still have people that are traveling long distances to access services. Our interim response to this, and which the DG alluded to, and we have information on this as well, we have provided mobile courts just to make sure that the web services could be brought closer to people, especially in areas where, you know, we're still operating in the police stations. We now have acquired, you know, mobile courts just to make our services closer to those kind of areas that currently we are not able to deal with. Of course, the issue, I think, is a change of mindset to our court personnel, and that cuts across the entire spectrum of court services. That, you know, just the sole provision of personnel as well as the infrastructure and modernizing courts, without changing the attitude of people that drive those processes in the court, that remains a key challenge. And I think that's why, in terms of our emphasis this year, especially this relates to the training that the Justice College, you know, should look at, is also just to try and improve in terms of the mindset, because the more, you know, those kind of issues are attended to, the better that can, you know, this kind of new investment that we are making at the court level could achieve, you know, much better mileage out of this. But as you know, that the part of the issues as well, because the judiciary now, currently with regard to the lower court, is still being handled by the Justice College. It is but one of those projects that currently the Chief Justice has been given that responsibility to coordinate all training programs in relation to the judicial officers. And I think with the completion of that project, we hope that, I think, maybe also the training curriculum that judicial officers need to do, that needs to be changed, because I must emphasize the point that, you know, the greatest challenge that we face as far as the quality of our services at the court also relates to the capacity to our judicial officers. And it is in that respect that this training program and this new initiative that the Minister emphasized, that the curriculum for the training of judicial officers needs really to be talking to the real aspirations that people have on the ground. It is in that context that I think it is about one of the issues that this year the Chief Justice, I'm not referring to it, but I think when he addresses you, he will really elaborate in terms of what are the programs with regard to the judiciary that have been undertaken. But currently we'll continue to provide the lower court, as the Minister has indicated, until the Chief Justice has fully assumed the responsibility to deal with those issues. Chair, I'm sorry to have taken much time, but my intention was just to allow a lot of time for questions. And thank you for the opportunity, Chair. We would I've got the entire team here, and I think we will deal with all of the questions that will be raised.
That's good, except that I think members need some tea, particularly because it's cold, and we love cold tea. So it's been sitting out there for about half an hour. So please, go and get some tea, and let's come straight back, please. Let's take literally 5 minutes, so that we can allow. We're already at almost 3:45. People want to start leaving at 4:30 because of transport and other arrangements. So please, let's just take 5 minutes and come back. It's always nice to have collaborative evidence, as it were. Then the second thing that I think we need, and I've spoken to, where is Ms. Gom? Ms. Gom, actually, if somebody can just note. What we need is, I think part of the problem that Imam was raising, Mr. Gianni, is that we've got line items that are things like facilities management, that are personnel, and then we have something called lower courts. But nowhere do we pull together in one document so we can see at a glance exactly how much of the department's budget actually goes to the lower courts. So they're all under different line items, and we don't really know how much of the resources are committed. So I think in line with Imam Hassan's input there, because I see that it's troubling not just Imam, but others as well. It would be very good for us to get a document that sets out at a glance all the relevant line items that pertain to lower courts, whether it's personnel, whether it's facilities, whether it's revamping, all of those things, so that we can see at a glance exactly how much of the budget is committed to the lower courts. And then you have a broken line. And under that broken line, you'll have those funds that are going to the NPA, for example, that will eventually be seen at your lower court, such as new personnel expenditure. That will mean new prosecutors posts in lower court. So you'll have that. You have legal aid as well under that broken line. So that at a glance, we can see not just what part of the department's budget is actually earmarked for lower court, but also these other units. And then we've got it in one document, as opposed to us going to do the analysis and research in the annual report and in the statements. So I think if that can be made available, that would be very good. Okay, so those are the two things. Then there is, with regard to the family advocate TRB, one of the things that we don't have, and I'm very glad, let me just say, that there's a major boost in that office and so on as far as budget's concerned. Clearly, probably not as much as you would have liked, but it's quite important for us to still get what we got the very first time. I know this is only about, what, the second or third time that we see you, the second time. But it's important for us to get cycle times. So, for example, when a case comes to the family advocate in Cape Town, how long does it take to get finalized on average? What are your backlogs? What are the challenges as far as actual service delivery is concerned? We don't have any kind of synopsis and analysis of that. So if you can please let us have it. I see the number of cases you people have, and I see the number of responses and the number of correspondents and so on. That doesn't help. What I need is a cycle time, an average indication of, so that I know that if somebody comes to me with a problem and says, gone to the family advocate and it's taking 2 years for my case to find, I can say that's normal or abnormal. You see what I mean? So let us have something like that. Pardon? But that's something that we've already asked for earlier on. But on the family advocate, which operates differently, it's important that we get that information, all right? I'm going to give you an opportunity later. I'm just going through a whole list of things that I think that we will need. The victim support line item, Mr. Gianni, there are victim support offices or something like that that we now have in our court. I don't see in the documentation the actual numbers. In other words, we're talking about those individuals that actually assist with rape cases and so on and other traumatizing kind of crimes. Give us a sense of exactly how many staff we have in our court, very much like your maintenance officers and your maintenance investigators and so on. Intersectoral plan for case backlogs, something that I discussed with you a while ago when you came to the committee, and I hear what you say that you're still meeting with the other role players sometime this month. But it's very important that we have some sense, because like we said at the hearings, it doesn't help for justice to have a huge budget on case backlogs, and then legal aid doesn't have a similar plan, or the prosecutors don't come to the party with an equal amounts of resources. So I think what we, and Mrs. Camera raised it with me yesterday or the day before, what we need is some idea that you guys have put your heads together, come up with a plan going forward, bearing in mind the various budgets that you have, and are moving together in a synergized way, as opposed to you guys forging ahead and then having to lend money here and prop up the legal aid there and so on. So let us have that also in a separate document, not a very thick document, but some plan going forward. Okay? That one. Report, low court, okay, transcriptions, Mr. Gianni. We must, I think, also start getting reports on cycle times for transcriptions, because one of the obvious possible problems, and I'm not saying it is a problem, it may be more efficient now, but we need to assess this. You're moving away from a decentralized model to a more regionally based model. One of the things that I can just think of immediately is how long are these transcriptions going to start taking? Is this an improvement on what we have? I heard you talk about quality, but I think there's also a case to be made out for efficiency. I mean, it doesn't help to get a good quality report, but you get it 10 years down the line. Okay? So I'd like to see what the cycle times are for transcriptions in the various regions that you've got, and I think we must start monitoring that if we don't have stats now. Okay, so that's the lot from this side. Let me ask members, please try and raise points around these issues that I've now asked. Don't repeat it, because we've literally only got half an hour, and I'd like to give members maximum opportunity. So I'm not going to restrict the number of questions in the sense that, in this sense, that we're going to have a few rounds, okay? So members can feel free to stay as long as you want. We'll keep them here. They can take later slots. But I know a lot of members have to leave at 4:30 because of transport and other things, okay? So I'm going to, those of you who have transport obligations just or problems, just indicate to me, and then I'll let you ask all your questions at the same time. But let's start with two. Mrs. Tamara, Ms. Johnson, Mrs. Mashlawem, Mr. Yuber, Imam, Mr. Sibanyoni, in that order. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'm reading this, going through this with Mr. Gianni. Somehow I don't get the sense that this document is aligned to the President's Designation of Debt and the Minister of Finance's budget for this session. Because I almost said it was written before there. Because, I mean, when they allocate funds, especially probably just as they don't seem to have to investigate that document. I mean, so it seems to me there's a disjunction between the way we approach them in this document and the way it was approached by our
leader. Let me please just interrupt you. No. Just relax. I'm just trying to explain certain things. I specifically said to Mr. Gianni that he doesn't need to deal with case backlogs, because we've had a full session on case backlogs before. We didn't. Now, I just want to continue. You can proceed, Mrs. Cameron. Just relax. I want to make it quite clear that the reason why that is done is not for the fact that he's prepared it at the time, this juncture to the Minister of Finance or whatever it is. It's a specific instruction for me, because I didn't want us to now waste time and deal with what is done already. So please understand that in the context of whatever it is that you're going to ask, okay?
Yeah. I would like to draw your attention specifically to page 7 and 30, and there are one or two other pages where it cropped up, where instead of seeing the priority listed, it's like page number 3 or 4, down the line with a whole lot of other stuff, like this program and that program and so on. Then we get to reducing backlog. And I would just like to ask, is it seen as the main priority for this year of the Department of Justice? Because that's what our leaders in the country told us. And I wanted to get his comment, because this document doesn't line up. And the other question you already have, which I asked earlier, and are we making preparations early in this year to ensure that we actually spend all the money? Because clearly, I think we all have the impression it needs to be spent. I mean, there's lots of this, if you look at the unfunded priorities of this department, half a billion.
Okay, Mrs.
Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Advocate Johnson. Just on the issue of equality courts, and I know they're not community courts, they're courts in the community. I know in terms of the equality courts, that we were aiming to get one in every magisterial district by the end of this year, depending on that contract. And last year we had 22 courts in the community, whether we're rolling those out. Thanks, yeah.
Good, thank you very much. I have who's next in line? Mrs. Mashlam. Then your message, John.
Okay. I want to get my question of a regional court. Just to say, you know, we need a list of those, or the list of your existing regions now, so that we know exactly how are the regions divided. I don't know if you have this in your...
Regions, Mama Mashlawa, what? Regional courts or regional offices?
The demarcation of regional offices.
You mean magisterial?
Magisterial, yeah.
Yeah. You want them to provide more?
At least to how they have been demarcated.
Oh, the current demarcation.
The current demarcation.
Okay. No, particularly your concern is that cross-border area.
Yes, you know, yes.
That problem. I think that can be provided surely very quickly.
Yeah. Also, the second problem is also on that. I raised a question with the DG the other day about the finances, the budget for those areas again.
Just tell Mr. Gianni the specific course that you had the problem with because he's the right guy.
Oh, okay. The Umzimkhulu Magistrate Court. You remember, you recall that there was this demarcation in 2005, but then they still say that they received their salaries from East London. So I was saying, what is the process? How far is that process?
And it's also underwater as a...
I'm sure they've discussed that. I don't have to raise it again.
Okay, Imam?
Thank you, sir. You know, I need to try to make it on a few issues, but let me just concentrate on one.
Okay.
It's going to be very broad, but I think it's important.
Okay.
Right? Besides what Mrs. Cameron mentioned, I mean, what was mentioned by the press also is the transformation of the judiciary. Very important also. If I look at the budget, for example, right, then I still think, if we look at the government, we may look at a single judiciary. At a single judiciary, which means that each and every component is as important as any other component here. Right? There might be, because in terms of workload or priorities, might be more important than I mean. The judiciary will then be the judiciary. And I think we need to look at that direction. If I look at the budget, for example, I still, in a way, I know how to describe it, see some discrimination, you know, in the allocation of funds. And particularly the high courts and constitutional courts and what have you. I mean, if I hear, for example, that the Chief Justice, right, has a meeting regarding the budget of the Constitutional Court, who speaks for the lower court? Is there anybody that meets the minister, that meets the, you know, the executive regarding the lower court? And nobody does, right? And I think that is, you know, a bit of concern for me here. Right? The question is that putting, are we moving in the direction of budgeting, right? Is it in sync with our vision of a single judiciary here?
Thank you, Chair. My first question concerns the regional court's civil jurisdiction that we were told yesterday. Now, I presume because the regional courts are the courts with the highest backlog, but I don't see that we're making provision in the budget for an increase in regional court magistrates and facilities. Maybe it's also hidden somewhere. Then, Chair, my second question concerns expenses that we share with other departments and in particular public works and the government garage, which is transport, I suppose.
I see, for example, in our public works expenditure was 75%. In other words, we couldn't spend everything. Is that because of public works involvement, or does it have anything to do with that? Because on the long term, I see we double our budget, but if we can only spend 75% now, how are we going to spend double that amount of money in 2 years' time? And I also would like to know, as far as the government garage is concerned, whether the motor vehicle allowances that we started to pay magistrates, is that reflected in the budget that we will now be paying less for motor transport? And I'd also like to know what the position with judges is. Do they get motor vehicle allowances, or do they still use the government garage for transport?
75%, Mr. Yubari, must be taken into account, is because we're not to the end of this year yet. So by the end of this year, they're projecting that they'll receive those accounts from PWD and that they would have it abstained. So that's really why they would put it as a current amount actual spent at the moment. But that usually peaks because you receive those receipts later and so on. The second question, I think, is an important issue. This seems to be a bit of a disjuncture, if I may. Okay, so you've got that. A lot of questions, Mr. Gianni?
Chair, I will ask the members of my delegation just to fill me in case I don't include or perhaps include most of the issues. Firstly, the alignment of our priorities with the State of the Nation address. There is that alignment. Perhaps maybe the sequencing of the priorities that Ms. Camara refers on page 7, it doesn't necessarily mean that reduction of the case backlog is lower in our priorities. It's a cluster project that I think currently has been, that's why we have a dedicated attention to it. And I think the presentation that I did was just to highlight, because this is a key government project that we're dealing with. And I think maybe just one final question, it still remains a priority. That's why it's still separating.
There is also, Mr. Gianni, on this issue of case backlog. You know, there is a legislative provision that says Parliament has to be reported on the matter of cases that are long, and I think there are different levels between the district judges. We never received such a report. And I think it's about time that we do, because previously I think part of the reason we didn't do it is because we didn't have the stats. But we do now, and particularly it's made much easier, and it's going to become even more easy with the e-scheduler and so on. I think we must start receiving that very, very urgently. And I think your first report must coincide with that report that you are giving us on your meeting with those role players as well.
Yeah, well, Chair, I think I can just say to you that last week we had drafted, because normally the Minister has to request those reports to be tabled in Parliament. We have issued draft letters to both the NPA as well as the Magistrates Commission to give those reports. So I think once we have received a response to that, it will be part of our additional report that we make available.
Wonderful.
I think the other issue that relates to the lower court, how it's being resourced, I think this will be dealt with as your request, that we need to give you that indication, a sense in terms of how this budget is allocated to the rest of the courts. The quarry court, I think that still remains the project. I think Shireen will just feed in here in terms of the information that we have currently to date. So it's still in our plan to roll out this equality court to all courts. Community court, we are rolling out, I think in terms of our narrative report, I'm not sure whether it has now been circulated. You'll see where we are as we stand at the moment. There are only a few provinces where we are still awaiting the minister to give us a proclamation to allow the fitting of the community court in those centers, Northwest, I think the Eastern Cape. That's only the hit that we have as far as that is concerned, but in terms of the president's promise, we have mostly established all community courts in all provinces, except for the legislative issues that relate to the proclamation that the minister currently is dealing with. Chair, on the, I'll just ask Mrs. Kosara to give us just a very brief report on where we are on the demarcation process that relates to the issue that Ms. Masao raises. But can I just indicate this, and I think this is what I need to be understood, that the legislation gives power to the minister to proclaim ministerial districts in terms of, you know, this new proposal that we're working on. Now, the fact that Mzimkulu has now been, in terms of the Constitutional Amendment Act, now been included under, you know, a different province, what still is outstanding is for the minister to finalize the proclamation. That's why you still have those magistrates, because in terms of the establishment, they're still in the Eastern Cape. Only once that process is finalized, will we then be able to move the entire personnel infrastructure to the province in terms of which the minister will proclaim the district to be under. Say on the, I think Ms. Kosana will just give the, I don't know what you want to do it now, just on the demarcation so that we can move out of that.
Thanks, Madam Chair. After the Constitutional Amendment Act was passed, there were 17 areas, which in terms of the justice service areas were cross-boundary magistrate districts. That can remember it done away with the municipal system. So we had to study the process of recognizing those magistral districts so that we align them also within the current scenario in the Constitution of Control of Amendment Act. You'll find that, for example, in the area of Kangala and Bronco Street, you'll have to bring Kangala because it's not in Gauteng. You'll have to link it with Gauteng and take it out of Mpumalanga from part of one metropolitan district. That process obviously needed firstly the whole the exercise of collecting the statistics, the information, the keys, etc. Because the issue of the proclamation must inform by the process. There will, once as far as the process, there will then be a request for minister to proclaim that area out of the province into a new district. And once the process is finalized and the proclamation, there will then be a representation of staff and budget, etc. For example, if I give you Northwest, Northwest going to lose about 80% of the costs and the population into Gauteng. That must be met with a proper rationalization. What we are saying, for example, you cannot wake up on the 1st of October and say all the people from the old district are now served by GPD without having looked into what is the implications on the resources and the budget of the Northwest Division. Because obviously at some point, it must say in terms of budget that the rationalization must make sure that Gauteng, in terms of the increased work, will have to get more extra and Northwest get more less. And that process must happen not only in terms of provinces, but also in terms of Madras districts, before even we create the new position. Now the process of information collection, construction, etc. has started. That's to find how many people are affected, the population, etc. We've got a draft report that we submit to the Comptroller to see the scenario, etc. And after those consultations, the minister will then consult the report and give the proclamation. It's then that the implementation plan will commence in terms of all these other areas, etc. What has delayed the process, obviously, is the process around the... we know that does not have much effect on justice because of the national competence. But surely the judgment in terms of Mali, etc. must be taken into consideration at some point so that we are sure that whatever we are going to put in terms of the planning process will not have to be reversed at some point and go to square one. So that's a process that we put in place which becomes better organization. And as I said, the first stage looks at the impact of taking those areas away from their provinces and away from the district to this other district. And what we've done then is that in terms of personalization, people, staff, budget, cases, we will then issue a proclamation. We also intend to introduce the proclamation in interim arrangements because there are massive cases still outstanding in those districts. We can't just say tomorrow. Yeah. We must give them over 3 years to go through the process until they take new cases from this other case, from this other court also. So we'll provide a detailed report that you expect for the minister's interim report, just to indicate where we're finding the report and what are the timelines that we intend to complete the process. The minister plans is currently to have a workshop with magistrates on the 20th of October. One of the major things, she just wanted to indicate to them that report, so that this interview is going to happen in terms of shifting around the causes, so they can start preparing themselves around them.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Just to conclude the response to the other question, I think Ms. Solomon's question with regard to the budget, precisely why you have the increase, that dramatic increase on the constitutional court budget, it's meant precisely to allow the Chief Justice now to take that role. Because I think previously, one of the challenges that the Chief Justice continuously mentioned why he's not able to take that responsibility because the infrastructure is not available. Part of that budget that is transferred to the constitutional court, we now have created a structure that assists the Chief Justice to take that whole responsibility with regard to the, you know, integration of the entire, you know, judiciary under his umbrella. So the reason why you see that substantial increase in the Constitutional Court, part of it is to enable the Chief Justice to take that responsibility. Of course, the dilemma that you see they're going to have in terms of our current budget with regard to the lower court is that that lower court budget, it only addresses all issues that pertain to the lower court. It's not divided around what goes to the judiciary, what goes to the administration and so on. But these are some of the details that I think when we provide the budget as requested, that will indicate exactly what goes to the lower court with regard to that. But one issue that the minister has continuously, you know, insisted upon is that now we want all the judges, presidents in all the provinces to begin to take the responsibility of coordinating all the judiciary that would include within the province, within the high court as well as the lower court. So that, you know, when it comes to issues of assisting the justice in planning for the judiciary in relation to the issues of transformation, that at the provincial level, you have the JT taking that responsibility. I think some of them have now begun that process of ensuring that, you know, the magistrates are included in their, you know, initiatives that they deal with, just to make sure that I think at the budgeting level, as we begin to deal with it, that the issues are also taken into account. Chair, on the issue with regard to the regional court budget, especially in relation to the new proposal that the minister made with regard to the increase of the civil jurisdiction. This year, I think what we're going to be doing in terms of our financial aid, it's not in the budget as we speak at the moment because we don't assume that the legislation is going to be passed this year. But our plan is that I think as soon as part of the submission of the legislation to Parliament, we'll indicate our request for the increase of the personnel that is supposed to deal with the, you know, the civil jurisdiction. I think our idea is not to expect the current, establishment of our judicial officers to deal with the additional, issues of the civil matters. As you know, we still have a great challenge with regard to the criminal backlog. So the issue is that this will be moving part of these functions from the High Court and so on in terms of the civil jurisdiction. Similarly, we also have to provide in our next financial year, that is the planning for the next financial year, not this one that is ensuing now, but 2008 and 2009, the new budget for the regional court that would include these new issues. So I wouldn't say you have responded to the 75% on this. I think that issue has been. On the motto behind allowances, the two issues here, I think the magistrate allowances, as you know, they are quite different from the judges. They get an allowance to pay his car, and that allowance, the budget, has now been transferred to the central revenue. No longer within our mandate to deal with it, it has now been transferred to the treasury to deal with it. The only issue that we still cater for, because judges are on a different dispensation, is that I think it's part of the GG transport that you have. As far as the allocation of cars to the judges, the department still takes that responsibility, providing from our own vote, to provide judges with the additional, with cars and so on. And so that's why they are still currently being dealt with separately. I know that the minister, this is an issue that she's going to be raising with the Remuneration Committee just to ensure that whether this cannot be integrated. But also suffice to say that currently I think there is also a proposal from the judges with regard to a new scheme for the judges we hired, and I wouldn't like to dwell much on that because it's still at a discussion phase, and I think only then, once the process has been concretized, can we report on it. And that's why we currently provide this budget along the two items as we do, because the dispensation is not the same. Is there anything that...
No, Mrs. Cameron.
Just wait.
Please, just wait. I think it's the other you wanted to raise something earlier.
Not quite sure. I just wanted to point out that the key cycle times have been dealt with in the narrative report on page 46.
There's a table for each office so that we can see at a glance what those key cycle times are and whether they are substantively different from office to office, and then we look at the personnel and understand why that is the case and so on, so in a tabular form. Miss Advocate Chen?
The clinical response, yes, we are on track, and we've put a strategy which will be coupled with an awareness campaign so that we maximize on the quality course wherever there would be. Previously, we've had with the other 220, they were mainly located in the main magisterial district. The focus now will be for the more outlying areas, especially in the provinces that haven't had the quality course set up, to the ones that already have been in provinces where they were ahead.
And this year, how many more?
It's going to be 146. It brings us to
366, Advocate Johnson. Okay. What question do you say wasn't answered? About whether they're going to spend it.
What strategies have they got to
take? But I thought you did answer that. What's your strategy to ensure that everything you've got is spent?
I think before one really responds to that, one has to take into account what has been the main contributing factor for that under expenditure. As you know, that the budget for courts, in fact, they spread across, right, all the, some of the issues relate to the policy issues that are in the DG's office, for which we don't have any control on. But just in relation directly to answer your question on the what capacity are we dealing with, in fact, we have, I think, as part of our priorities this year, and this is what I've indicated when I dealt with organizational setup last night. There's got to be a regular monitoring system that is going to be in place just to monitor the expenditure pattern. I think, Mr. Johnson, I don't know whether they raised this yesterday. There's a budgeting review committee that will be sitting quite regularly just to monitor right across the department whether we're spending in accordance with the plans, and if not, what are the issues that we need to deal with. But also, as you know, cost services is the main beneficiary of this budget. The appointment of court managers is but one of those issues that would enable us to make sure that at each and every court level there is a management framework to make sure that the budget that is allocated to a court, that is part of the report that court managers are going to be reporting to court services, is also part of the indication whether we're spending according to the priorities, and if not, we then have to be able to give reasons in terms of why we are not. So in fact, this is but one of the issues that is going to be included in the performance management of our managers within court services, just to make sure that we increase the capacity of spending the budget. And hopefully, I think if one looks at the figures that has been presented with regard to our court services, I think it's not such a very huge problem. As you know, part of the expenditure is going to be coming towards the end of this year on infrastructure, as well as the item that Mr. Johnson has indicated with regard to the digital recording system. But it's an ongoing issue that I think this year we're also going to, as part of the provision of personnel that we've made to courts, to emphasize as part of the monitoring, responsibilities.
And also your regional officers now have a better idea of their budgets going forward.
If I can just indicate, one of the reasons why was this delayed or underextended, it was the allocation of budget last year was a bit late. And this year, the arrangement that was made, in fact, I'm glad because last year we have finalized the allocation to regions so that beginning of the first, April this year, that budget should be allocated. I think this is what we have asked the CFO office to make sure that from the beginning of the financial year, that budget needs to be reflected in all the regions so that they can start the expenditure at the beginning of the financial year.
So it's a multi-pronged approach, really. Okay. All right. Members, we've got 5 minutes to 5:30, so I'm going to check with those people who have transport problems whether they have questions first so that they can pose them. No? Okay. 3 for all. Mrs. Camara, Ms. Johnson, anybody else? Mr. Sibanyone, oh, you're back. You still only get two. Anybody else? Last round? Imam? Going? Mr. Malaklela? Going? Mrs. Kemp.
Yeah, I wasn't quite sure what you mean by people, because I've got a lot of little questions for clarification, but I'm not quite sure what they mean. Anyway, I'm done.
Why don't you ask your big questions, and then the little questions you can get, say to them later on, and then you can get clarity.
Anyway, I just wanted to ask on page 5, the item service delivery performance improvement and item number 4 is transforming and improving customer service. Now, we all know the Public Service Commission report was rather negative about the way the courts operate. And I just wondered if we could have a bit more detail. I mean, what are they actually doing about this?
Okay.
I mean, I'm glad it's a principle, but what is actually going to be rolled out? And then on page 6, the item under intersectoral alignment, there's close coordination cap on the prime hotspot area, 169, in the planning implications. Could you have some examples of just make it real for us, how is this going to actually work? Thanks.
Okay, that's good. Let's jump.
Thanks, Chair. Just on the children awaiting trial, I'm very pleased to see that there's been a 50% reduction since last year, which I think is really admirable. I just wanted to note that intersectoral task team is still meeting with it. They're still monitoring it on a monthly basis and what they're doing to bring it down further.
Okay. Good. I've got Mr. Sibanyone.
Thank you, Chair. You called me before my turn.
I called you before. No. You must bring Imam. He said you were late, said you're not here, and so that's an internal ANC caucus matter.
Okay.
You must deal with.
Coincidentally, my question was in relation to the demarcation.
Just pull the mic a little closer, yeah.
My first question was in relation to the demarcation. Mrs. Kosan has answered it. But what was my going to the area with to say? Will the proclamation wait until all the courts affected by the previous cross boundary wait before it is made? Because I would say that maybe some of the areas are different, the problems may be different than in other areas.
Okay.
And then the Hatfield Court, the special court in Hatfield, next to Pretoria, is it a permanent feature? And then what lessons have been learned so far in terms of successes and the like?
Okay.
What is there in the Hatfield Court which is not
the Pretoria Court? Thank you.
Imam? My question would be around the family advocate. If the family advocate can give us a detailed input together with the bosses in our language, but it is part of the input of court services. On page 10, I think it's called it, this is slide 10, the court service approach for 2007. And I'm glad to see here that the family advocate services are going to be extended here, right? But to disadvantaged areas, I think. Right? I would like to know, I mean, this is a matter that crops up in consequences. People with their children, custody of children, what happened, right? How is it going to be extended? And to which is it going to be each court? a family advocate representative. He's a family advocate. If we put there, what how do we need to happen? Please help.
Okay. Anybody last chance? My committee never disappoints.
Thank you, Jay. Could I refer to page 15 of that presentation concerning the additional capacity at High Courts to deal with appeals? This is listed as an achievement, but I think it's not yet there, so hope it will be an achievement by next time, I hope. How far have they progressed with the arrangement to get retired judges and also senior counsel to act to get the backlog back?
Okay. Right. Mr. Chiang.
Yes. Can I just indicate that I'll answer the question, the first question that has been raised. And I'll also ask, I think, on page 6, Mr. Duran just indicated the operational level, those 169 police stations, how we're dealing with that issue, because it falls sort of the joint responsibility. And then on Ms. Johnson's question, I'll ask Shireen just to give a feedback on the intersectoral team. And then on the demarcation issue, I think I'll ask Jerry just to link more with the issue that Mr. Swinley has raised. I'll deal with the issue with regard to the Hampton Court. On the extension of the family advocacy offices, I'll ask Lucia to just respond to that, and Peter will also just give you the progress report with regard to the appeal letter. I mean, the case reduction project with regard to appeal to the High Court. So the page 5, I think it's more of an integrated service delivery improvement plan. What that includes, it's the rollout of the Riyakabusa, as you know, that part of that program of Riyakabusa first is to create the capacity in terms of giving numbers like what they've done, the numbers that are given with regard to the court management. But part of that is also part of the training, just to ensure that the personnel at the court level, that would include all managers, including people that are in the court level, that you know, the user-friendly atmosphere that currently is not prevailing in our courts, and I think this is more in relation to the family law services, and I think one of our plans this year is to have a more proper information management on complaints at court level so that we're no longer more reactive but more, proactive in terms of addressing. So that is actually detailed in the action plan that I did not find time to deal with from the vulnerable groups as far as that is concerned. Then, Chair, I think I just wanted to respond to the Hatfield Court. We have, I think, at the policy level indicated that these courts should never be confused with the ordinary or the envisaged community courts that are being envisaged by the department, which would more be in line with the traditional courts that I think the legislation that was discussed previously that we're going to look at. But the current projects that we have, these are just by the extension of the main sites of the main courts. It's an extension of so that those courts are located within a specific area that is faced with this kind of crime related issues. It's more on issues that relate to the petty offences and so on. What lessons we have, I think, gained out of this? Firstly, I must say that we have launched a specific project just to ensure that there is uniform procedure in the application of this court. As you know, there are in all provinces, as I've indicated. But what we have found to date is that, the approach that has been taken by this court has not been uniform. So we have established a task team, firstly to formulate guidelines in terms of how the community, the Hatfield type community court should be, dealt with. And coincidentally, that project is almost complete now. We have finalized those guidelines, have been printed, and I think we're still awaiting a workshop just to make sure that all provinces, function from the same kind of theme in terms of the implementation of the Hatfield type community courts. One of the good lessons that comes out of the Hatfield type community courts is the involvement of the civil society, especially in issues of the diversion programs that the NPA is dealing with. We have found a very huge, assistance. For example, in issues where part of the problem why the Commission of Crime is these three children, in terms of our current criminal justice system, we don't give focus to those children, as we speak. But one of the outcomes of this project that it's giving us is that we now more or less have a proper response that we can assist those children so that they don't again commit crimes. In fact, we have in this province some programs that you know, the NGOs are running just to make sure that the children are being prepared if they are diverted from the system to deal with those kind of issues. Yeah, I think maybe, Chair, without taking much time, can I ask just Sharon to deal with the intersectoral team and then the rest will follow as I've indicated.
Thank you. Yes, the intersectoral committee still meets monthly, and we've expanded the way we are operating because not just do we meet intersectorally on a monthly basis, but a week before, we as government departments meet so that we can manage a whole lot of issues internally. We have got an embargo on stats because we can't verify, and we're tracking and putting an information management system on child justice matters. So until that is in place, we've embargoed the stats except for children awaiting trial. A way in which we've managed to make it more effective, which is why the numbers are changing, is that we've put together a task team just to deal with awaiting trial children, and that task team we have the assessing judge chairing, and there's an alert going out that every month when we look at the stats, the legal aid board together with the assessing judge will quickly track children that are being awaiting trial, but also those where they've been there for more than 90 days, and that figure has reduced drastically, and you'll see those numbers in the presentation. But more than that, what we've also put in place, apart from the information management task team, is a round table that we're having in the next month or two, and before the end of April, is to look at the issues of prevention and recidivism, as to what strategies do we put in place to ensure that children are managed at a particular level so that we don't get them through the criminal justice system but arrest, and pardon the pun, the situation before, and we're looking at how do we reform that in view of the other processes that are taking place. We've also expanded on the committee. Previously we had one or two NGOs working in the field, but we've now expanded it to include the Chapter 9 so that they play a monitoring role that becomes more effective when we have problems. But in addition, we've now called on many of the national NGOs like the child welfare organizations, etc., so that they can support us where it's required.
Thank you, Chair. Just with regard to the alignment of the 169 police stations, you will find that in many of the areas where we are building new courts, etc., it has been aligned already with those areas. For example, Motherwell in the Eastern Cape is a very specific example where the police have focused their attention, etc. As part of that, our new courts are in that area, etc. But it's not only the courts, it's also the services and where we focus our projects on, etc. If we take, for example, in Mamelodi and those areas, where there's a very high focus on certain activities relating to gender issues and women assault and things like that, we are focusing our attention on those same areas where the police is dealing with. So it's not just facilities, it's across the spectrum dealing with those things. But in terms of the alignment, in terms of facilities, there's a joint team that is set up under the development committee that deals with planning ahead, looking where are the problem areas, etc., and making sure that when we deal with these things, we focus on the areas where there are problems, like the 169 police areas, but also the presidential nodes, the development nodes, all of those things are taken into consideration when we plan facilities. In terms of the question pertaining to the Hatfield Court, just to add perhaps that one of the success areas that has been found is that they help in dealing with certain issues that are prevalent in that specific area. Hatfield specifically, the universities and the complexes around it, business in that area, have certain issues that they identified as blockages, etc. We help deal with that in focusing on those, specifically clients that are normally not dealt with in the normal court in terms of viewed as perhaps less serious and things like that, vagrancy, all those sort of things, are now being dealt with in order to clean up that area. And once that is dealt with, it's like what they call in the American Red Hook communities, the broken windows. You deal with that, then the other sort of crime then leaves. And that is what we are finding from her access in the other courts. In terms of the progress, in terms of the dealing with a few cases in specifically, get very good results in that regard. We have in Pretoria launched a specific project to try and get the participation of the senior council, the SILC, and we have thus far had a huge response from them on a pro bono basis. We've already got 55 senior advocates that are giving every Monday from the 26th of March, so start on the 26th of March, every Monday right through till the end of the second recess, their time free of charge to deal with the backlogs. We'll be instituting two appeal court rolls per Monday, which will deal with approximately 600 pages of appeals per Monday. We hope that through that initiative, by the end of December this year, we will have dealt with at least 1,000 appeals from Pretoria. We're extending this now to Johannesburg in the same way, and thereafter we'll be dealing with the Pietermaritzburg, which is the key blockage area. So, very good results in that. They've really come to the party. We've not only got the assistance on Mondays, but many of them have indicated that during the recess periods of the High Court, they would be willing to sit more than one day. So they'll most probably be sitting 2 or 3 days per week, and through that we will really see some results. So I must say that's a very excellent way of getting cooperation also from that side. Thank you.
That's it, Mr.
Chair.
Madam Chair. I do agree that some of the areas in the democracy are very small and they could be solved through the document 10. The challenge is that although the Kangala or whatever area is very small, it could impact on other areas. Because Mpumalanga is giving Kangala one side to Gauteng, it's losing Bushbuck to the other side. To Mpumalanga is losing Mutha to the other side to Limpopo. So you can't focus on one specific area, you have to focus on a province. So that we touch all the particular areas in particular province all at once under proclamation. And with that law, if we're going to issue proclamation one by one. There's one thing which obviously we need to be mindful of, the whole process of consultation. The minister has obviously provided in the past all the marketing we had, I think we're done in the top 10. But currently we must know that any democracy change has got huge impact on the legal profession. How can these organize themselves in terms of all the costs, police, everybody, and the sharing, etc. So I think at some point, before we change the program, the minister needs to have some form of consultation so people are able to use their views, etc. Now we think that people are going to initiate the consultation process only in terms of one area. It's going to prolong the process. So if we come with everyone that decide the changes, what is that mean? We intended basically to come with one set of maps where the changes are going to happen. And a kind of a snippet narrative. So that what we can do, we can put it by government notice and say these are the things that the minister intends to revisit. And let the people are subject to make some kind of input or so that as we change it, that needs to be taken into account in the views of the people or so. We can get consolation from the fact that the minister has said this must be done by August 15th. So we're waiting that out just to get the we've done almost 10 of the 17 areas in terms of that information collection, consultation within the justice sector, the magistracy, the prosecution, the legal aid board, etc. There's been easier so that by the time the minister wants to get the views of the profession outside, in-house, we've made our own rearrangement also. We hope by August will be far in terms of the finish process. Mr. Janab asked me just to also give a slight update on the community court process. The hard field, I mean, we correct the terminology, there's a process underway which will neutralize the community court proper in the context of the hard field community court. What we seek to do is that in every court that has been established a community court, we want to bring element of community justice system in there so that the court can operate on two levels. You can have a formal court system where your state actors participate in various matters. You can have a parallel system in those courts where aspects relating to sexual offense can be sorted, can be dealt with by community structures. So what we have done is for the purpose of just defining the kind of a framework, what the structure should be, who needs to sit there, what kind of requirements are going to be required, and all these other aspects, and what matters must be directed towards this kind of process when it comes to formal court. That's going to have a huge impact on the case backlog over a long time, etc. But we are now in a process where we have basically a paper that we can just kind of start chasing out and just getting views across the system to move forward. And as I said, the community courts which were for them by the president to perform it, will be used as sites to test that concept before we move up beyond those courts.
Okay, and let's see how the last thing.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start by answering this question in this way. We have, in the interim, solicited a report from HR Work Study, which has indicated that for the family advocate to can meet his current obligations emanating from legislation, 1,269 posts would be required, and we're currently on just over 250 posts. And that is one of the main reasons why you see such a jump in the budget allocation of the family advocate. And what we are planning to do is to establish a minimum of 2 satellite offices per province, that we have at least 3 service delivery points in each province. And we've also started a system of what you call periodic offices, where we just go into a court which is high volume producing in terms of the work that we do, and have a family advocate there when they, for instance, on the day that motion court sits, have a family advocate, a family counselor, and a clerk ready to assist there, and then just attend to the matters that are enrolled on that particular day. We are far from covering all the courts, because of also the 2 new acts which have extended us into domestic violence and maintenance courts. We are taking the matters on as and when the magistrates refer them to us, but I don't think we are making any good progress in that area. But I think parallel to that, we are also working on a plan of minimizing the adversarial approach towards litigation in family matters, also in anticipation of the impending Children's Act, because I think that act is seeking to mainstream ADR into the way we resolve family disputes. So we are trying to work out a suitable mediation model that will add value to the family to family law, and hopefully that will reduce also the demand on family advocates to be in court all the time, and that would also unblock court roles.
Thank you. Okay. I think what we'll do now is we'll just suggest to Mr. Gianni and his team that we get whatever reports we can within the next few days, particularly the performance reports, for example, is something that can be churned out, I guess, very soon, compared to the case backlog ones, which is still going to need to come. So those reports that we can have almost immediately, together with Ms. Thomas reports and so on, let us do that. Please, Ms. Sabisi, double-check the documents that members are supposed to have, because definitely I want all of those documents that we are going to interact with on Tuesday to be in members' possession over the weekend, at the very least, so that members can look at those things. And then let me just also give you a sense of next week. Next week, we will definitely be sitting on Tuesday. We've got that program, which is the Masters and so on. Wednesday, we'll probably have to sit. We've got the sexual offences tagging report that we need to begin processing. You'll hopefully get a copy by Tuesday so that you can look at it overnight and so on, and then we'll have a substantive discussion in the committee. If need be, we'll try and sit as long as possible on Wednesday to try and finalize that report, because that's quite urgent. The other thing we need to finalize is the equality review report. You remember we had those hearings with the department, Mr. Durant and the Human Rights Commission, to
together with those other committees that are going to be doing hearings on the quality review. So we'll have to finalize our portion of the quality review as well next week. So that's the other thing that we'll need to do. And then also possibly look at one or two other issues which I will brief you on this now. I see some magistrate stuff that's come our way and so on. So depending on how we go with those other two reports, which are really priorities, the sexual offences tagging and the quality report, will then either have to factor in these other ones or not, depending on our utilization of time. So we will definitely be sitting on Wednesday, Thursday as well, and possibly Friday. Okay? Tuesday definitely. What I'm saying is that we may or may not sit on Friday depending on how well we go with those other reports. But next week we have to finalize at least the quality and the sexual offenses tagging. Okay? So that's basically your program. I know you don't have it in written form, but that's most members are here, so please just take note of it. Okay? Mrs. Cameron?
Just on the issue of the server documentation from Yanni, I see we just get the big fat thing called 3E, which contains a lot of statistics. I mean, I just received it and I was glancing through it. It does have quite a lot of statistics on food performance. But going through it, I mean, there are questions that arise on every case. I mean, and quite a lot of the diagrams are difficult to determine what they're saying, because they were instead of copying in black and white color diagrams, so very often you can't see which color is which, and I mean, it's quite difficult. I just assume there's room for interrogating this document if we can get the opportunity. I don't know when that might be, but
let Mr. Gianni give us that other report. Make it in the format that is easier for us to read and decipher than these graphs and so on, in the way that you usually do, Mr. Gianni. Around the issues of conviction rates and how many cases finalized, but you know, the usual format that we do. And I think members will then be able to, I think once you're able to read the document, you'll be a lot more satisfied. So let's do that. And then, Ms. Johnson, you had your hand up as well?
Chair, just to say, while Ms. Vici is here, for Tuesday, we've only got the State Law Advisors document and the master's documentation. We haven't got Dion Rudman's or the Justice College documents. We also don't have.
They're both available. Okay, Mr. Durant, do you want to say something?
Thank you. Just to assist Mrs. Cameron, our annual report, which was tabled from page 39 in particular, as most of the statistics that you require.
Let us have, in any case, in the old format, in terms of not just graphs and so on, give us numbers, give us the breakdowns in the way that you usually do, okay? Because we've become very used to receiving that kind of briefing from you, and I know that there's a lot to cover. I realize that, and that's why I said you know, don't deal with the case backlogs and so on. But clearly, just let us have that. And I'm sure once we're able to look at it, people can read it. Okay. We'll then see each other on Tuesday. Members of the ANC, if you could just stay back for 2 minutes. Thank you.